Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Working from home during the coronavirus outbreak is not an option for the thousands of frontline healthcare workers in Ohio. In the lull before the storm, we're talking about the plight of healthcare workers, what they need, and how we can help. Dr. Matt Exline is the medical director of the Medical Intensive Care Unit at the Wexner Medical Center. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
How are you preparing your personnel for the rough days to come?
Yeah, so a lot of it is just really learning from what other systems have experienced in New York and in Washington State and elsewhere, and kind of taking the lessons they've learned and really playing with them and thinking about, well, how are we going to apply this when our patients arrive here? So it's everything from how do we see somebody when they come into the emergency room and say, I think I might have coronavirus, to if they need to go on a ventilator, how do we make sure that when we put the patient on the ventilator, we do it in a way that's safe for the patient, but also safe for the staff? And then what do we do to protect the staff and the patient and our visitors once they're in our hospital and in our ICUs?
All right, so let's break that down a little bit. What have you learned from what other systems like New York, which is in the throes of it right now, what are you learning from them?
So one of the first things we learned is we want to not have everyone descend on the emergency room or their family doctor asking for a test. And so many centers across the country, including here in Central Ohio, have done the drive-by testing centers. And so very early on in the pandemic, Ohio State developed a call center, so you'd be able to call in, you'd talk to one of our nurses or doctors, we'd schedule you for a test, and then when you got a test done, it looked like a car wash, like all the cars are drived up, you kind of get directed into your lane, you slowly pull forward, and then a staff member in full protective gear is able to do the test on you, and then you're able to drive and get back home and wait for the results at home. And so that's something we adopted very early. More recently, we've learned that if you see a patient who has coronavirus, we need to get them into isolation as early as possible. And then if we think the patient is going to need additional help, specifically a ventilator, providing that to them sooner rather than later, both to protect the patient and also, generally speaking, if we provide that support earlier in the disease, the procedure tends to be safer for our staff as well.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about how our frontline healthcare workers are getting ready for the surge in Ohio. My guest right now, Dr. Matt Exline. He's medical director of the intensive care unit at Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. If you have a question about this issue for Dr. Exline, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'd especially like to hear from frontline healthcare workers out there. What are you thinking? How are you preparing? What are you worried about? Dr. Exline, the Columbus Dispatch yesterday, top of the front page, across the front headline, Ohio lacks triage plan for virus. What are your thoughts about it? It says that in other areas of the U.S. and overseas, those who are older, have pre-existing medical conditions, or don't have a family are generally at the bottom of the priority list. How are you planning on prioritizing this when the need and when the shortages emerge?
Yeah, so the first thing we want to think about is our best hope, thanks to the quick action of our governor and Dr. Acton, is that our curve has been flattened and that we won't reach a stage where we have to think about prioritization of that way. And the hope and our best projections are we are going to have enough materials here in Central Ohio to provide for these patients. The second thing we need to really start doing with our patients, and what I've told our staff is the coronavirus pandemic has really emphasized things we should have done always and tried to do always, but really brings it into sharper relief. So we should be having a conversation with every patient who is coming into an ICU about What are their goals? What conditions do they have before this acute illness? And is going on life support, going on the ventilator, something consistent with their goals? And so many people who've been admitted to the hospital are asked, do you have a living will? Do you have goals of care? Do you have a medical power of attorney? You know, we call DNR status. If your heart were to stop, what should we do for you? And I think talking to all our patients, and this is what we do in the past, and asking, you know, should the worst happen, what would you want us to do, is an important part of making sure that what the therapies we're offering our patients are consistent with their own goals.
Do you think that there should be a uniform triage plan for the virus?
I think that the state of Ohio and our local region should be working on how do we triage people. How do we make sure that if one area of the region is being particularly hard hit, that we can get the resources to that area or get the patients to, you know, hospitals that have more space at a given time? So, yeah, I do think we need to coordinate amongst all of our medical system in Central Ohio to make sure we can deliver the best care to the most patients possible.
You know, that's one of the things coming out of New York. We hear a lot about the disjointed healthcare system there, that they're not working together. What's your sense about how Ohio Health, Mount Carmel, Wex, you know, the OSU system and others are working together?
So it's really been amazing. I can say at a high level, I know that Ohio State, Ohio Health, and the Mount Carmel system have been working very closely together. And then the other thing is, when you get right down to it, Central Ohio is a pretty close-knit community. So, you know, the ICU docs at Ohio State, we all know our partners who work at Ohio Health. We all are friends with our partners who work at Mount Carmel. We're texting each other ideas. We're texting each other, you know, hey, this is what we're doing with an IV pump to try to minimize how often the nurse has to go in the room. Have you guys tried that? Hey, we're trying to use this different technique to minimize our use of PPE, our protective equipment. What are you guys doing? And so the coordination, both as an official level amongst the hospitals, has been impressive, but also at the local level. Doctors, nurses talking to each other, picking each other's brains, really coming up with ideas. It's been really inspiring.
You know, at the front of, you know, kind of the point of the spear are the people in the ER units there, the people in the ICU. These are the people we keep talking about. But at the back end of the system, a lot of practices are struggling since they've been shut down. People have been laid off. They've been furloughed. Medical workers, nurses. I mean, you know, you read stories about nurses filing for unemployment. What kind of coordination is there to work people back into the system in some way to spell each other a little bit more?
Yeah, so we're looking to see how, at least at Ohio State, how can we use someone who previously worked as an OR nurse or previously worked as a clinic nurse, but now there aren't the patients there in person to be seen. How do we redeploy that person to still make use of their talents? And so one thing we're doing is we're really kind of asking everyone, well, what skills do you have? You know, your position now might be more administrative, but what clinical training do you have? How can we redeploy you in a clinical frontline area? And then the other is we've created a whole bunch of positions now that we didn't have before. So as I walked into work today, every entrance to our hospital is taking my temperature and giving me a mask and making sure that I don't have any symptoms of coronavirus as I walk in. Well, that didn't exist a month ago. And so a lot of the frontline staff that were deployed in these ambulatory areas are now being pulled in and are helping us man those stations, man that call center I talked about, where we're talking to patients that suspect they may have coronavirus. So we're able to redeploy a lot of our resources that way.
I heard a quite moving interview with someone who teaches people to operate ventilators, for lack of a, I mean, just that's the layperson approach to this.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's a much fancier term for what they do, but he said he's very concerned that there aren't enough people to operate all the ventilators that are going to be come into use across the country. And that they're very complicated machines and they manage very complicated illness.
What we're hoping to do is kind of each to their talent. So there are patients that require a high degree of complexity to manage the ventilator, and especially a lot of those patients are when they first present, they're quite sick, they need some advanced support, and we have to use kind of more advanced modes on the ventilator to support them. And really, that's skills that you develop over, you know, years of practice and training. Mm-hmm. There are other patients who, as they're improving, they still may need ventilator support, but maybe the level of support is less, the complexity of the mode that you're using to ventilate the patient is less. Oftentimes, it may be very analogous to anyone who's ever been diagnosed with sleep apnea and wears a CPAP machine at home. That is kind of the lowest level of vent support we offer, and the kind of knowledge base needed to operate that ventilator, we can train you up pretty quickly. So what we're doing is we're kind of creating crash courses for some of our providers who maybe in their residency or in medical school had a few months of experience in an ICU, getting them back up to speed, you know, teaching them the very basics, and then also teaching them, here's when you need to reach out to an ICU provider and ask for more help. And so we're developing it that now, as I said, I'm very optimistic that in Central Ohio, you know, we're going to be stretched, but we are going to have the resources to deliver that care.
I have a question from a caller regarding ventilators. David in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, David.
Hello. It's my understanding, I'm 68, that ventilation is half, 50% successful with life for a year, and that life after ventilation could be lower cognitive ability. There is a side effect of lung damage, infection. Bottom line, ventilation does not seem to be that helpful here, and I'm not hearing anything in the media about that part of it.
Dr. Exline?
Yeah, those are great points, mm-hmm. and you're absolutely right that more and more data is coming out. And again, let's separate from coronavirus, where we don't have a lot of experience, and just focus on if you're in an ICU and you're on the ventilator, what are the long-term outcomes? And it's really still in the infancy of our understanding, but as we look more and more at it, people who are in the ICU for prolonged periods of time may have, you know, at least for the next 6 months, some pulmonary issues. There may be some, you know, conditioning issues in terms of your ability to live the life you lived before you were in the ICU, and there may be cognitive issues. And that's separate from the coronavirus. I'll go back to what I talked about earlier, which is this is bringing into sharper focus things that we knew already, which is if you are severely ill and you develop respiratory failure from an infection, there is a high mortality associated with that. Depending on where you look, it may be up to 20 to 30% of patients who require intubation for a respiratory infection may die before they leave the hospital or within the next 30 days. So coronavirus may be slightly higher than that number, but it's in the same ballpark. And this gets back to really having a conversation with the patient and the front end and saying, you know, these are our goals. This is the chances of the treatment. And the problem and the reason why we offer it to everyone is I can't tell you which way each individual patient is going to go. So I know some of my patients will not survive, but I don't know which of those patients they are. And so we try to offer this therapy to everyone. And so that's the struggle. And that's why we really want to talk to families and say, Is this what you're interested in? Is this something that your loved one would be interested in?
Well, I'm glad you brought up families, because one of the heartbreaking things about all of this, as you know, is that families aren't allowed to be with their loved one once they enter the hospital. How do they make informed healthcare decisions about somebody without being near them?
Yeah, and honestly, of all the changes in our practice, that's the one that I think has caused the most angst amongst our nursing staff and amongst our providers is, part of what we do is educate the family and support the family during the patient's critical illness. And part of what we do is form a partnership with the family and say, you know, how are we doing? Is it a better day? Is it not a good day? You know, what are our goals today? And not having that face-to-face interaction has been a real struggle. We are pioneering kind of video techniques. So how do we get the family and allow them to Skype in, FaceTime in, talk to their loved one? How do we have video conferencing the way everyone else is using video conferencing, mm-hmm. but now with the family to bring them into the mix and let them still participate in the care?
Are you working on that? I mean, is it realistic once things start ramping up?
Yeah. So we, one of the first things we did, we previously had always invited people to come and participate in rounds. So we'd say, hey, we're going to be looking at our patients from 9 to 11 as the whole team. Come join us, be part of that team. Now what we've had to do is say, okay, we're going to call you every day after rounds and update you on what we talked about. And then also, actually, one of our patients, the first thing we did when we got him off the ventilator was we FaceTimed with his wife so he could finally talk to his wife again.
My guest is Dr. Matt Exline. He's medical director of the intensive care unit at Ohio State University's Wexner Medical Center. Coming up, we're going to hear from the president of the Ohio Nurses Association, also a critical care nurse at the Wexner Medical Center. If you have a question or comment, we're talking about frontline workers today, what they're coping with, what they will be coping with in the coming days as a surge approaches in Ohio. 614-292-8513 is the number to call, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 MPB. PR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Ohio hospitals are preparing for the inevitable surge of COVID-19 cases. We're talking about how that happens. What about the frontline workers? Still with us is Dr. Matt Exline. He's medical director of the Medical Intensive Care Unit at the Wexner Medical Center at Ohio State. Rick Lucas is a critical care registered nurse and the president of Ohio Nurses Association. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. And I'm actually president of the Ohio State University Nurses Organization, the union that represents the 4,000 nurses at OSU Wexner Medical Center.
You're not president of the Ohio Nurses Association?
No. I'm okay. On the board, but not president of the overall organization.
Okay, so you're president of the Ohio State
University Nurses Organization.
Gotcha. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
All right, so what are you hearing as a board member? What are people talking about as far as across the state?
You know, one of the biggest concerns that I'm hearing from everyone across the state is access to appropriate personal protective equipment and really lots of concerns with the falling CDC standards that seem to be based on supply chain and not science. So, you know, we're seeing where nurses are being told and healthcare professionals are being told that they can go into one of these rooms with wearing just a regular procedure mask and not an N95 mask, which protects us against airborne particles. So that's a very major concern. And then looking at, what's happening in places like New York and other places where they're experiencing the surge, where they're running out of equipment. And so something that we really worry about is having to ration care if it comes down to that.
You know, you mentioned the CDC standards of supply chain, that the standards for the personal protective equipment is supply chain oriented. What do you mean by that?
So instead of having enough equipment on hand and, you know, the federal government putting into place a coordinated effort to get the appropriate personal protective equipment into the hands of frontline healthcare workers. Instead, we're lowering the standards based on the supplies that we have on hand. you know, nurses are and healthcare workers are reusing masks. That's nothing we've ever done before. That's really unprecedented in these times. So those are all very concerning for us on the front lines.
Dr. Exline, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the struggle is getting used to a world where we have some scarcity of our PPE, and then really as a group, as healthcare professionals, deciding what do we do to maximize this resource for the most people, and also knowing that we don't have a lot of great data. And one of the problems we face right now is the uncertainty of everyone kind of knows how we prevent flu spread. We don't know how we prevent coronavirus spread. And so it's just coming up with the balancing of how do we maximize our PPE, maximize how long it's going to last us so we're not, you know, out of bullets when we really need them at the end of the month.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That's Dr. Matt Exline. He's medical director of the intensive care unit at Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. Also with us, Rick Lucas, critical care nurse at the OSU Wexner Medical Center. He's also, let me get that straight, president of the OSU Nursing Organization and a member of the board of the Ohio Nurses Association. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from John who says, nurse practitioners are unable to practice if their collaborating doctor dies. One nurse practitioner may have thousands of patients. Ohio should allow nurse practitioners to see patients during this epidemic. Rick Lucas, what do you think about that?
You know, access to primary care is an ongoing concern. And you know, we hear, you know, from folks across the state that, you know, some of these collaborative agreements are an issue and hard to put together during regular times. So, you know, right now when folks need primary care and need to focus on wellness the most, you know, I think it's a good time to look at that and maybe, you know, ask the governor for an emergency measure right now to address that.
Dr. Exline?
Yeah, I wouldn't be an expert on the collaborative agreement in the ambulatory world, in the outpatient world, but in the ICU, I can tell you our nurse practitioners are the backbone of the response we're planning, and we really are counting on them to practice their best ability, and I have many fine MPs that work with me.
Do they have specific relationships with a physician, or is there a relationship with the unit or Ohio State, Dr. Exline?
So for our nurse practitioners, the majority of them, I'm their collaborating physician.
Okay.
But then that could be like if I was somehow incapacitated or left the organization, we could fairly readily slide that over to one of my partners.
Gotcha. And then you talked about primary care, Rick Lucas. I'm wondering about the practices that are closing down, the nurses that are being furloughed. They're applying for unemployment. They're not at those frontline doctor's offices when people call in.
Yes, it's very concerning. And so we definitely need all hands on deck. So anybody that's furloughed should really be utilized to help in this effort because they do have the skills and abilities to be able to help impact our overall plan here. So I know at OSU we're looking at a team approach with an expert nurse as a team lead, and then, you know, extending that with licensed assistive personnel. So that could be RN. So we definitely need all hands available. So if anyone's interested, we can get they can go to the OSU job board and apply for a position for sure.
John in Pataskala, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to thank both individuals that you're speaking to about, you know, their service. Thanks. I mean, we'd be in such bad shape without them, but where I'd like to go is, I think anybody on the front lines deserves hazardous pay. It's probably double what they're making now, just because they're really putting their lives on the line, as both the individuals can speak to that. And I would prefer if we could, like, tax these patriotic insurance companies to kind of pay for that, because I really haven't seen anything from them other than potentially saying they may make it free to test. But I think hazardous pay is the key. Taxi insurance companies for that. And, you know, I think that'll make a lot of people happy, at least monetarily. It won't fix the PPE issue. But the PPE issue and the lack of bed space is probably due to insurance companies anyways. I think they're part of the root cause of this, of why we have shortages.
Rick Lucas, what about hazard pay?
That is definitely something that we're beginning to talk about. You know, nurses are going to be asked to respond to this this crisis in an extraordinary way and do a lot on the front lines and put ourselves at risk. And, you know, nurses are out spending their own money trying to source their own personal protective equipment. And so there are a lot of considerations and reasons why hazard pay should be available to those of us on the front lines.
Has this something that's crossed your desk, Dr. Exline?
Not directly. I think making sure that our staff are compensated for the extra time and the risk they're taking is important. But I guess the thing that's impressed me most is how much people have just volunteered their time and to pitch in and roll up their sleeves and help. And so the usual kind of how much am I going to get paid has really not been the main issue at the front end.
I've heard about medical personnel not going home. They're getting different places to stay so they're not exposing their families. Has that come up, Dr. Exline?
Not so far. Most of our employees have been going home, with the exception of occasionally people if they fear they may actually be sick. I know some people have put themselves up in a hotel for that reason, mm-hmm. but I think most of us are still going home and you know, living our lives with our families, maybe just not quite as close.
Let's see. Peter in Cleveland, you're on the air. Hi, Peter.
Hello, I'm here.
Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, all right. This is for a doctor or whoever. Can be put on authorities that you know, transfer this complaint what I have to the public.
Okay.
On TV.
Go
governor
ahead.
Or lieutenant governor, I'm watching them every day. And so I also watching people wearing masks.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Those masks, 90% of the masks is not working on that people because people don't know how to test their mask, even if it's N95 or surgical mask or whatever kind of homemade mask.
Okay. That's a good question. I mean, this new order from the governor, Rick Lucas, and the health director, that everybody wear masks. Now, even if they're just cloth masks, does that give any comfort to you and the folks that you work with?
So the cloth masks that people are making at home or using bandanas can be used out in the public to prevent that person spreading the virus to someone else. Those aren't appropriate PPE to use in the hospital. And then also, to the point of the N95 masks, you know, we do see people out in public using them inappropriately. They're holding them up to their face. They're taking them on and off. And so they're probably putting themselves at more risk by not using the equipment appropriately. And those N95 masks have to be fit tested because they have to form a tight seal on your face. And if that's not there, you're not getting the protection. So it's really vital that equipment be left for healthcare professionals that know how to use them appropriately, and that the community use the appropriate resources as well.
Okay, Peter in Cleveland, thanks for that call. Robert in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Hi, Robert.
Hello, Ann. My question is sort of for the doctors or for the nurse. In Asia, we're starting to see a second wave of some of this COVID-19. So I'm wondering, after we get done with the strain of it and if we start relaxing the social distancing, do they have fears about a second wave of it and a second surge? And what their plan is to sort of to cope with that if it does come.
Dr. Exline?
Yes. So we certainly worry about a second wave. The main issue, though, is if we can handle a few patients at a time without much problems. So the idea behind flattening the curve is if only a handful of patients are coming into our ICU, we can really get them the care they need, and we'll have the protective equipment we need, and we'll have the ventilators and everything else. So it's not that we won't see coronavirus after, you know, May 15th or whenever the endpoint of the first wave is. It's that the cases we'll see will be at a low enough level that we'll be able to get the patients the care they need. And also, hopefully, we'll have more information about treatments that work, drugs down the pipeline that may be more beneficial down the road. So we definitely will continue to see cases, just hopefully not to the level that say, New York City is seeing now.
Thank you, Robert, for that. You know, Rick Lucas, I wanted to ask you just about, you know, from a statewide point of view, what you're learning from your role on the board of the Ohio Nurses Association about, you know, it's being in the big metropolitan area at a place like, you know, the Wexner Medical Center is one thing, being at a smaller clinic in a rural area, that kind of a thing. I mean, are there haves and haves not in all, have nots in all of this when it comes to nurses on the front lines in Ohio?
You know, we are definitely hearing from folks that there's varied responses, and you know, we're encouraging everyone to follow the guidelines that are set forth by the state and, you know, the CDC and all of those. So what we're mainly hearing is, you know, differences in availability of personal protective equipment and things like that.
We are going to continue our conversation. That's Rick Lucas. He's critical care nurse at OSU's Wexner Medical Center. He's also president of the OSU Nurses Association. Also with us, Dr. Matt Exline. He's medical director of the intensive care unit at Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about the frontline workers today in the fight against the COVID-19 disease. My guests are Dr. Matt Exline. He's medical director of the intensive care unit at Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center, and also Rick Lucas. He's a critical care nurse at the OSU Wexner Medical Center. He's also president of the OSU Nurses Association. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Dr. Exline, at this point, what kind of mental health support are the frontline workers getting? The stresses have to be building up by now. I know they are, just among ordinary people, let alone the people in at the front.
Yeah, it is, and I think one of the problems is many of our escapes when we leave the hospital have all been taken away. Mm-hmm. You know, one of my therapies was I would go to the gym, and that's gone. I would, you know, enjoy some podcast or listen to NPR, and the coverage is all about COVID all the time, so
yeah.
It's really hard to get away. We're working with some of our mental health professionals to develop some like wellness programs for our staff. We've always had a program, especially if we have a very hard or mentally draining case in the ICU, where we'll have our mental health professionals come right up and talk with our nursing staff and try to help them work through some of those emotions. But it is a struggle, and I think one of the things that kept us going and is really brightening our day is the expression of support from the community, as some of your callers have done today. I actually had one of my patients just call me out of the blue to say that she was thinking of me and I was in her prayers. And little things like that just go a long way to helping relieve us in a time of stress.
Rick Lucas?
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. You know, we have the stress, trauma, and resiliency program at OSU where, you know, we can't meet face-to-face now, but that is still an option to do it, you know, by a call-in to let everyone, you know, debrief after those really tough times. And then our national union has also put together a program to offer counseling services to folks during, you know, after a traumatic event. So there are definitely resources out there and, you know, hopefully many more to come.
Are you feeling the pressure build, Rick Lucas, at this point as we wait for, I guess, the shoe to drop right now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're really bracing ourselves for the, you know, for the surge. You know, the numbers here in Ohio are looking good. So
yeah.
Thanks to everyone for making the sacrifices and staying home. It's making a difference. You know, you're all definitely on the front lines of this. We're the last line of defense. So everything that everyone's doing to stay home and slow the spread of this is really the most vital work right now. And it's given us the precious time to get ready and to hopefully get our stores up on PPE and medical equipment. But yeah, there is definitely mounting pressure amongst the staff. There's been a bit of a downturn in the census because of all of the elective surgeries and appointments and all of those things being canceled.
Mm-hmm.
So some staff are having the ability to take some time off and spend some time with their families. And so that's been helpful, but definitely a stressful time.
Let's see. Natalie in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, thank you. So I'm a nurse here in Columbus, and I'm pregnant. And I was just wondering what we should be doing as, like, pregnant nurses on the front lines, because I haven't gotten a whole lot of guidance from my doctor. And I know some other people who are pregnant are just not coming into work at all, and I wasn't sure if that is what we should be doing. And what are you guys doing at Ohio State?
Dr. Exline?
Yeah, so one of the issues is we don't have a lot of great information. So far, what we do know, it does not appear that coronavirus is of any higher risk to pregnant women than it is to the general population. And the early data that I understand from China is that they didn't see a lot of complications in their pregnant patients. That being said, I think, you know, making sure all at-risk staff, whether that's because of pregnancy or you're on a medication that may suppress your immune system, or you may just be of an older age group and at higher risk for that reason, making sure we put them in a role where they can be safe. And if that means you're not necessarily caring directly for the COVID patients, or if that means, you know, we're using you on a call line or something like that, I would definitely talk to your unit about, you know, how can you still work but also keep yourself safe.
Natalie, thanks for that call. Have you heard from pregnant nurses, Rick Lucas, on staff there?
Yeah, we have. And so some nurses have followed up with their providers and worked with the hospital to come up with safe work accommodations, you know, to find a less risk assignment. Just like Dr. Exline mentioned, the call line, you know, was a good option for folks. You know, avoiding the COVID cohort units where all of those patients are housed. You know, some folks have made accommodations to work outside of those areas. You can still very much contribute to the effort, but in a safer capacity if you're at risk.
You know, one of the things about all of this is that we still really don't know that much. I say we as if I'll ever know that much about it. But, you know, as a society, we still have a lot of questions about the coronavirus, right, Dr. Exline? I mean, there's a lot of unknowns.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest stressor is with other illnesses, your doctor has some certainty about, okay, if you come in my office with these symptoms, I kind of know what's going on. I can kind of counsel you on what the next week looks like. I know what steps I have to take to keep myself safe, what steps I have to do to keep you safe as the patient. And I also, you know, our facilities have these built-in models where we know, like in our unit during flu season, we'll be a little busier. We know we have to stock up on our PPE during flu season because we're going to wear more masks because we have more patients with infectious disease. And so one of the biggest things is that coronavirus has just taken that certainty away. We don't have a good gestalt, a good sense of which patients have the infection yet. We don't know, as Mr. Lucas recognized, the best way to protect our staff, and the advice keeps changing. And we can't give our patients the best trajectory of, okay, if you display these symptoms, this is what it means. And so as time goes on, as we answer some of these questions and get more information, I think both our medical professionals are going to feel more comfortable, and then we're going to allow the public as a large to feel more comfortable as well.
Tyler and Powell, you're on the air. Hi, Tyler.
Hello. I am a recent nursing school graduate, LPN program, and because of timing, the testing centers are closed. So whereas I would normally be taking the NCLEX and receiving my license, with the testing centers closed, I have heard talk of issuing temporary permits with the application for reciprocity for nursing students who are unable to test but willing to work.
Rick Lucas, do you know anything about that?
Yeah, so there was a law passed and signed by the governor that as long as folks have finished their programs and the nursing school sends a letter of completion to the Board of Nursing, that there's the ability to issue them a temporary license.
Yeah.
To be able to practice as either an LPN or an RN, you know, depending on your education.
So do you go to the state board of nursing for that?
Yeah, the Ohio Board of Nursing would issue the temporary license.
Okay. All right, Tyler, I hope that helps. Anybody else? Questions? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. An email from Les says we ought to pay the education expenses for those on the front lines, even if they paid them already. I guess there's a lot to think about when it comes to how we think about our healthcare workers going forward. Like I said, you know, Rick and Dr. X, Rick Lucas and Dr. Exline, I mean, there's a lot of people who are being laid off at doctor's offices all over the place. And I'm just wondering how well coordinated the state is at getting these people back to work where they're going to be needed and getting them back to work when this is all over with, if whole practices have kind of folded.
So there's definitely been a downturn in routine visits. And follow up. And so once we kind of get back to, you know, some semblance of normal, you know, that's all going to pick up. And, you know, patients are going to need primary care. Mm-hmm. Patients are going to need to come in and have, you know, these routine procedures. They're routine or elective right now. But if you don't take care of things, they do become urgent. So, you know, we are going to pick back up in those other avenues, especially primary care. That's very vital for the health and wellness of our community.
And can I add one thing to that?
Sure.
I 100% agree. And the other thing for those listening is most primary care practices and most practices are rapidly adopting either video visits or telephone visits. So you can still reach out and talk and see your primary care provider now. That's one way to both support your primary care provider and their staff to keep the lights on and the practice going, and also a way to make sure you're getting the care you need. So don't just cancel your appointment. Reach out to your group and ask, do you offer these non-face-to-face options?
And the other question is, do the insurance companies cover them, and do they cover the costs that what it costs a practice to conduct them? There's a lot of questions about that, Dr. Exline, right?
There are most insurers that I'm aware of are covering the video visits the same or at least close to the same as if you had a face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
The telephone visits are not covered quite as well by most insurers. There's still some lobbying going on for that. But at least it's something, and I've done a number of phone visits with my patients over the last few weeks, and at least I'm able to check up and make sure they're getting the care they need and their prescriptions are filled and we're not letting anything, you know, fall off the radar while they're not able to see me in person.
Do you have any advice, or how are you guys looking at what to tell people about when you should come into the ER. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons to go to an emergency room ordinarily. What are your guidelines? What are you telling people about whether they should wait? Are you concerned that people are going to wait and endanger themselves? Dr. Exline?
Yeah, so I think that number one, with respect to coronavirus, COVID-19, if you're developing any kind of shortness of breath, chest pain, chest tightness, that's when you either want to talk to your primary provider or come to the emergency room and be seen. With respect to other conditions, I think the message is that despite what you see in the news, there are many patients still in the hospitals that do not have coronavirus. In fact, the majority of patients do not have coronavirus. So if you have something that is concerning to you and you can't get a hold of your primary care provider, you should still seek care the way you normally would. We don't want people jeopardizing their health because they're afraid of the hospital right now.
Hmm. And Rick Lucas, what about you for the folks, you know, from where you sit? What do you want to see coming through the doors at the emergency room at this point?
Well, we definitely want folks to reach out to their primary care providers for sure, if that's an option. Right now we have capacity, but as things pick up, it is going to become a little tight. But we don't want people to stay at home and be ill and come in and have a major problem with something that could have really been managed much better on the front end. So, you know, reach out to your primary care provider, call the ODH helpline. You know, there's guidance there. They can kind of help talk to folks about when they need to come in and advise on the need for testing for COVID. And so we're still here. We're still caring for patients, like Dr. Exline said, that don't have COVID. So, you know, we're still available.
I'd like both of you to chime in on this. How are you testing or screening employees at the medical center at this point, Dr. Exline? Is it every day? Is it every time they walk through the door?
So once a day, I have to log on to a website, and I have to take my temperature and log it, and I have to kind of run through a number of common symptoms for coronavirus and say whether I have them or not. And if everything checks out green, I can walk in the building. If I have any flags, then it gets sent to my supervisor, and I'm politely asked to leave the building. Hmm. So we're screening everyone every day that way.
And you're relying on people's self-screening then?
For the symptoms, yeah, it has to be self-reported. For the fever, actually, as I walked in the door today, we have one of those little digital infrared thermometers that they can shoot your forehead from a few feet away and know my temperature.
How do you, Rick, and I assume that protocol is the same for nurses and other employees at the hospital?
Correct. It's for everyone. And so the hospital has relaxed their position on calling off ill. You know, it's never a good idea for a healthcare provider to work sick, which is, you know, something that unfortunately has been a practice in the past. But so thankfully the medical center has changed their position on that and relaxed the rules so that staff are able to stay home when they're not feeling well. And then the hospital has also put together a call line that employees can call and report symptoms and get guidance, and the hospital's been very, very great about testing employees and prioritizing testing of employees that are suspected COVID.
Well, Rick Lucas, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Rick Lucas is a critical care nurse at OSU's Wexner Medical Center. He's also president of the OSU Nurses Association. Dr. Matt Exline, thanks for your time as well today.
Thank you. It was great.
Dr. Matt Exline is a medical director of the intensive care unit at Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center. That's it for now. Thank you so much for listening. Stay well. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.